Coming to you live from your local Chippendales, it's the Hand Plus Podcast brought to you by Movie Change Up, where I, every week, Joseph Ricky, break down this week in streaming along with my co-host Tristan Mayer. So if you have all these streaming services, especially with Andor winding down and there's not really any kind of big streaming service show going on right now, you're like, I have Netflix, I have Hulu, I have Amazon Prime, I have HBO Max, I have Disney Plus, I have Apple TV Plus, I have Peacock, I have Paramount Plus. What the hell should I be watching? That's what this show is all about. We watch all these shows that interest us. Tristan, my co-host, Tristan Mayer, goes and watches the shows that he finds interesting or he thinks that you, the viewers, will find interesting, and I do the same thing. Then we come back every Monday night. We talk about shows, we recommend shows or movies, and we say, hey, I watched this, you don't need to watch it. Or I watched this, definitely check it out. That's what we're about. Tristan, I ask you the question I ask you every week. How was your week in streaming?
It was a pretty loaded week for me. Well, not necessarily on all of the platforms, but on one in particular, I watched a ton of stuff. So last week, it was a lot of me talking and you listening. I think this week, it might be a lot of you talking and me listening. But when we get to Netflix in particular, I'm going to have a lot to say. I have a couple early reviews. So if you guys are excited for Knives Out or Pinocchio dropping next month, I'll be able to get you guys some reviews for those early this episode, so look forward to that. But yeah, definitely going to be a you episode this week compared to my episode last week, so I hope I have some strong feelings about this stuff, Joe.
All right, yeah, so why don't we kick this off? If you don't know, if you haven't watched much of our show, the Hand Plus, it's an acronym. It stands for various streaming services: HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, and so I'll kick it off with our first topic, HBO Max. The first episode in the Shaq docuseries dropped, and I thought it was really interesting. I'll be honest, Shaq is just this larger-than-life character that pretty much everyone in my age group, I mean, you're the same age group as me, so everyone in our age group grew up with. You know, he was more than just an NBA player. He was in commercials. He was in TV shows. He was in the Rest in Peace, Aaron Carter. He had a song, That's How I Beat Shaq. Shaq was just this entity to the kind of young millennial crowd. And I thought it was really fascinating. This first episode covers everything basically from his youth all the way up until his time going from the Magic to the Lakers. And I thought it was really fascinating, really interesting things about him I didn't know, like how the man that raised him wasn't his father. And when he was a young kid, his mom sat him down and had to tell him that the guy he calls dad isn't his dad. And later in life, he eventually found his biological father, and talking about how they grew up poor, but he thought they were rich because everyone in the house, it was just like a house full of love and everyone got along. And I just, you know, I think if you're a basketball fan, if you're a documentary fan, especially if you're a Shaq fan, it's definitely worth checking out. Is this something that would ever interest you, Tristan?
Yeah, I'm not obviously a big sports person. If you watch this show, that's not really my area of interest. But Shaq, like you said, is a big personality. It kind of extends beyond just sports. You know, I reviewed Steel on the show before. I've seen Kazam. Those are some iconic kids movies in my youth. So, you know, Shaquille O'Neal goes beyond just the basketball court. You know, he's very much a pop culture figure. So I'll be interested in checking this out, getting some more look into what made him who he is, especially because, like, I'm an outsider on the sport, kind of. So it would be nice to get a look at what made him so important on the basketball court rather than just as like a political, as like a pop culture figure. So do you think as an outsider, it would be able to give me some perspective on what made him stand out as a player more than just like a personality?
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the things that I thought was the most interesting is his mom and dad were like, you have to, when he was going to LSU, told him, like, before you go to the pros, I know everyone's telling you go to the pros, you have to get your degree. You know, you have to finish your education. Your education's the most important thing. But his college coach is the one that told him, like, you need to go to the NBA because he was so good and so much better than everyone. They were fouling him to basically stop him from dominating. And his coach is like, if you do another year in college, you're gonna get hurt and you may never even get to play in the NBA. So you can always come back and finish your degree, but right now I would say go to the NBA, which I thought was interesting, something I didn't really know.
Yeah, that definitely paid off for him. You know, sometimes college is not the best route, especially when you have a great gift like that.
Yeah. All right. And sticking with HBO Max, I know you wanted to do kind of like a mid-season wrap-up with White Lotus. There's a couple episodes left. Did you ever watch season one? I know it's kind of like an anthology as far as season to season goes.
I haven't made it through season one yet. I'm loving season two though. So I decided to save season one for the off season because I'm probably going to be kind of hungry for some more. You know when this ends, but yeah, there's two episodes left, and last episode was a really, really great one. So I thought it would be a great time to stop and kind of check in and let you guys know it's still really, really good. It's kind of a fun lampooning of like the millionaire class and the top 1% and kind of like these rich, bougie people who live on kind of like this secluded way of thinking. We'll talk about Glass Onion in a bit, and that almost had a similar theme of like how ridiculous the rich are and how strange it is to have that level of privilege. And they do a lot of fun, a lot of mockery and satire of these types of people, while also having like a really compelling mystery and drama all around that of, you know, how do the people get killed and what is the motive of all that and how does it all connect to this larger scale mystery. I'm not going to spoil any of the developments, but there's plenty of big twists and big reveals. And if you like that kind of tongue-in-cheek satire of the rich, you know, like The Menu just came out and it was kind of similar. If you like that kind of fun tone and campiness and goofiness, this has a bit of that too, but it also has that serious actual drama, actual mystery going on underneath all of that fun. So I'm definitely recommending it. If you haven't caught up on it yet, like Joe said, it's an anthology, so you don't have to worry about watching this first season. You can just jump right in to the second one. If you don't know the premise, it's set on the White Lotus Resort, and it follows these uber rich people who go to this resort for a week, and all the interconnected drama of these people that kind of come to the surface and bubble up to all of the highest possible tension you can possibly bubble up this drama to. So definitely a fun one, and definitely a worthwhile binge. It's coming toward the end of the season here, so if you haven't watched it yet and you got HBO Max, it's a perfect time to give it a binge watch.
All right, yeah, it's definitely a show that when things kind of clear up, especially holiday season, now that we don't have some of these other big shows, it's something I'll probably go back into. Anything you have to say about HBO Max before we move on?
Nope, that's all I got. Watch White Lotus.
All right, and with that, we're going to move over to Amazon Prime, a movie I watched that came out a little bit earlier this month. But I just got around to checking it out, and that's The People We Hate at the Wedding. I don't know if, Tristan, you watched this at all. But it was directed by Claire Scanlon, who I don't know if she's ever really directed a big feature before, but she's mainly done a lot of comedy work. She directed a few episodes of Glow, a few episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a few episodes of The Office. Pretty much if it's a recent like comedy sitcom, she's directed it. Stars Allison Janney as the mom of this, she's like the matriarchal figure of this family. And she has three children, two of them who are full-blood siblings to each other, played by Kristen Bell and Ben Platt, are going to their older half-sister's wedding in London. And she's played by Cynthia Adai Robinson, who's not as famous as Kristen Bell or Ben Platt, but she definitely has a recognizable face. And essentially... Kristen Bell and Ben Platt view their sister's their relationship with their sister very much differently than how their sister views it. They hate their sister. They view her as this like kind of hoity-toity rich person because her father is a very much a very rich French man, and who was at one point married to their mom, but he got caught cheating on her, and so she divorced him and eventually married their dad. And, you know, she, their sister, she loves them. They kind of hate her. And they don't want to go to her wedding, but they reluctantly feel like they have to. And you kind of realize that Ben Platt and Kristen Bell's characters suck. They're not, like, poorly written or anything, but they're just horrible people. And it's kind of this very, very dysfunctional family slowly coming together during one of the siblings' weddings. And I watched it, I think, this Saturday morning, and I feel like that's definitely the perfect time of movie. It's just like kind of a fun Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon wedding. Could be like a perfect like date night movie as well. It's on Amazon Prime, so if you got Amazon Prime, free to watch. But yeah, if you're a Kristen Bell fan, Ben Platt fan, Allison Janney fan, I definitely recommend it.
It's one I'll check out. I saw it on Amazon Prime coming up, but it never was one that I decided to click on. But yeah, you give it a pretty positive review. It sounds like something that I would be chilling out and watching on an afternoon. I just today tested positive for COVID, so I'm actually stuck in my house for the next few days. It's probably going to be one that I throw on to fill in the void of all that empty time I got to suddenly fill now. So That's one that I'll probably watch the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's one that's not going to make your top 10 of the year, but it's, I don't think it's going to be flirting with the bottom of your list either. It's just kind of a fun, average, you know, well-made movie, but it's not mind-blowing or anything like that.
Do you think there's a future for this director as a feature film director, more comedy work and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see her doing more in, like, this type of movie, more, like, fun sitcom. She makes another one of these that's solid, and Marvel will pick her up to make their blandness movies.
Yeah, on the surface, it looks like a Disney Plus movie, you know? They take, like, some TV director, and they're like, oh, make this comedy. But, yeah, it sounds like a little bit better than that, at least.
Yeah, it's a solid movie. It's just kind of like a hate-watch these kind of horrible human beings.
That sounds like my kind of movie.
Yeah. All right. With that, I say let's pop on over to Netflix. And there is a lot popping over there. If you want to, I feel like right now is probably the best time because I talked a little bit. If you want to give some of your reviews for Knives Out 2 and Pinocchio.
Yeah, I'll start off with Pinocchio. It's Guillermo del Toro's most recent effort. It's his stop motion Pinocchio. Based off of not the Disney movie, but the original kind of folktale of Pinocchio. So if you're one of those people who looks at the Disneyfied takes on like Little Mermaid and Pinocchio and thinks that they could go back to the horrifying, like grim fairy tales kind of take on these characters and the like really kind of darker takes on the metaphors, this is going to be that for you. It's very dark. It's kind of very scary. You know, it actually leads into the horror a lot of the Pinocchio story. And I thought it was a really, really great watch. I can't wait for it to drop on Netflix so you guys can all check it out because it's definitely one of the better movies of the year. It's not going to be in my top 10, but it's going to be in the top movies for sure. And I love the take on the original kind of folktale. I like that it leans more into that, into the horror, into kind of like the mythical take of it. It's not your kid's movie, but it's not so scary that a kid can't watch it. You know, I think a kid could watch this and it could be like their baby's first horror movie type of thing that kind of gets them into the genre a bit more. And it's scary enough to keep them a little bit on edge and maybe have them little shook it up at night, but it's not going to give them, you know, weeks worth of nightmares. So I highly recommend it. If you're a Pinocchio fan, of course, you know where the story goes. It's not going to do anything super new with the plot, but it gives you that story in a really, really cool visual way with the stop motion. The score is great. It looks great. And I just love that they went back to that roots of the Pinocchio story and kind of leaned into the horror of this myth. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
All right. How do they do the donkey transformation scene?
I mean, they don't do exactly what it is in the movie, but yeah, they do that. And okay. I don't want to spoil how things are done, but yeah, they definitely go into some of the bigger beats of the story and do that take on them.
All right. Yeah, I'm definitely interested in watching that. And then I believe you also watched Glass Onion. So how was that? Yeah. Does it live up to Knives Out?
Yeah, I have a lot more to say about this one because there's, you know, more than just another Pinocchio story. But I saw this twice in the last couple of days. It's out in theaters right now for a short burst of time. So if you're watching this, whether it's live or on the record, you got a couple more days to see it. I think it leaves on like Wednesday of this week. So if you want to check it out while you can. But yeah, Daniel Craig, he comes back as Benoit Blanc, and he's the only returning character. So if you were attached to Ana de Armas or any of the characters in the first one, they're not here. It's Benoit Blanc is going and solving a totally new mystery, totally new characters. But this time, the world's greatest detective, he is given a mysterious invitation to a private island of this elusive tech billionaire played by Edward Norton. And he's invited along with a bunch of other self-proclaimed influencers to go to Edward Norton's island called the Glass Onion, where he's going to essentially fake his own murder mystery and have them solve it as part of like the fun of the weekend. They're going to solve his murder mystery and he invites all these very, very influential people to his island, and he's kind of elusive, so they're all excited to finally be able to see it. And Benoit Blanc starts to uncover there might be more to these characters and their connections than is on the surface, and maybe that there actually might be a real murder afoot here on the Glass Onion. I don't want to get into any details of the way this plot turns and swerves, because if you've seen the first Knives Out, you know that he has a tendency to kind of pull twists and make you not necessarily be seeing the movie you're expecting to see. So this definitely leaned into that. There's all kinds of things I was expecting, subverting my expectations. You know, Rian Johnson's all about those, subverting of the expectations, and he does that plenty of times here. The standout still is Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc. He's great here. I honestly would argue that this movie is his best performance. I think he really finds the character. He really has fun with the character. and he's our lead in this one. Whereas Ana de Armas, I would argue, is the lead of the first movie. I think Benoit is our lead here. He's our eyes and ears into the story, and I think that's a different perspective, but I think it's a really fun perspective, and it lets Daniel Craig really carry this movie with that performance. And that Southern drawl, he goes back to it, and a great, great performance. Really, really fun to watch, and I would just love to see him do these forever, you know? But it goes beyond Daniel Craig. You have Edward Norton, you have Kate Hudson, you have Dave Bautista, Janelle Monáe, Catherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr. Like, you have a pretty stacked cast. If you were following the news that this movie was being produced, it was like every other day there was some new big name added to it, and there's even names that are in the movie that aren't on the cast list. You know, there's a couple of surprise cameos along the way that genuinely had me shocked to see people of that caliber in this kind of a movie. So a really fun time. If you have a chance to see it the next couple of days, see it, because it would really be a shame to have some of this stuff spoiled for you before it comes out. But if not, it comes out December 23rd on Netflix. So just in time for Christmas, you can gather the family together for a Christmas celebration and watch Glass Onion. So I definitely had a great time with this. And I think if you like the first one, you'll love this one. And I honestly think if you were a bit mixed on the first one, you might like this one more. Because I honestly think this is an improvement over the first one. It takes a lot of the ideas of the first one, the kind of farcical tone of it, and the kind of social commentary on the outskirts of it, and ups all of that, and kind of takes all the fun stuff of the first one and finds ways to make it even more fun. So yeah, to me, this isn't, not only lives up to Knives Out, but it's actually an improvement over Knives Out. And it makes me so, so excited for what they do next. You know, I know Netflix signed on for a 3-movie deal. So Rian Johnson hasn't even started writing the third movie yet. He doesn't even know where it's going to be set or what the mystery is or anything like that. So it might be a while, but so far so good on this franchise. And I can't wait to see what's next for it.
All right, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching Glass Onion, and that brings us to a movie that I feel like is going to be on the same caliber as Glass Onion. You know, when I watch Glass Onion, I'll feel the same about this, and that's Christmas with You, starring Freddie Prinze Jr. and Amy Garcia. I'll be honest, not going to give it that glowing a review. It's your cheesy, kind of made-for-TV Christmas movie where they get two people who are relatively famous, put them in there, they slowly fall in love, and it's just kind of fine. You know, you're not really watching this expecting this to win an Emmy for best original movie, you know, best television movie or anything like that. It's fine. It's solid. It's okay. It's no better or worse than the rest of them. But if you like Freddie Prinze Jr., if you like Amy Garcia, it definitely has a more Latin flair to it. Freddie Prinze Jr.'s daughter is getting ready for quinceañera, which is, I guess, right around Christmas time. She was born right around Christmas time. But kind of the general plot is Freddie Prinze Jr. is a high school music teacher, and Amy Garcia is this kind of aging pop star. She was the big thing, but her label has a hot new artist that they care about. They don't really care about her anymore. And she's told by her, you know, management team she needs to write a new big hit song, and she kind of doesn't know what to write, and then she gets stuck. She gets essentially snowed in, I believe, at Freddie Prinze Jr.'s house, because she meets Freddie Prinze Jr. and it's like, oh, why don't you stay with us? And then the snow hits, and she and Freddie Prinze Jr. fall in love, and spoiler alert, they write the song together, and everything goes well. Check it out.
Wow.
Check it out if you like those kind of movies.
Yeah, it sounds like a perfect Christmas night movie. You know, the B-level Hollywood star falls in love with the other B-level Hollywood star, and everything ends up pretty perfect at the end. You know, I'm in for that. I like Freddie Prinze Jr. You know, he was in Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, he was. That's, yeah.
It's a Jedi right there, Joe. You gotta give him some respect.
Yeah, for sure. I need a new transition. And with that. I need a new transition. I'll work on that. I got time this week. So we had a show drop, one that when it was announced, I was interested in. And then when they announced the director, they made it seem like he was going to be the only director. And I noticed about 4 episodes in, he wasn't the only director. And that is Wednesday, a kind of retelling, reimagining, reboot of the Addams Family franchise, directed by Tim Burton, at least the first few episodes directed by Tim Burton. We got Jenna Ortega as our lead as Wednesday Addams, Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia Addams, Luis and now I'm blanking on his name. Luis Mendoza as Gomez Adams, and you know, a few cast members, but it's not about them. It's about Wednesday, who has been in, I believe, 8 schools in 5 years, and eventually her parents decide to send her to their alma mater, Nevermore Academy, filled with a bunch of weirdos, but weirdos who are different than Wednesday, because they're more kind of have the personality of your average teenager. They just have different things with them, like her roommate who's a werewolf, or a gorgon, or you know, whatever kind of your mythical type creatures. And then you have Wednesday, who's kind of just dark and mysterious. And it was kind of like, if I were to explain it, I would be like, somebody watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and was like, what if we did that with Wednesday Addams? Is essentially what I got out of it. So if you watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, I'd definitely check it out. Or if you watched Riverdale. Riverdale's the other one. If you watched Riverdale and you enjoyed that, I'd definitely check out Wednesday. Or even if you're just an Addams Family fan. But Tristan, I know you watched the whole thing too. What were your thoughts on Wednesday?
Yeah, you mentioned it's very much a Wednesday show. The Addams Family is around. They show up for scenes here and there, but it's not about the entirety of the family. It's very much about Wednesday at this school and solving kind of a mystery revolving around the school and its history and your parents' connection to it. So it feels like they took Wednesday and put her in some other kind of generic teen mystery show, you know, and that could be fun. I think the Chilling Adventures Sabrina comparison is very apt. I think that's intentionally similar. I think Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is honestly more stylized than this even is. And when you have Tim Burton on the name, on the poster and everything, it's like I expect it to be kind of stylized, and I expect it to have that Tim Burton kind of color and flair to it. And it does here and there, but it doesn't look as cool and as stylish as I wanted it to look. Jenna Ortega is great as Wednesday, though. I think she really captures that kind of like distance and I know I saw an article that she never blinks on camera at all throughout this series. She made an actor's choice to never blink while she was on screen, so it's kind of adds to like the odd look and odd feel of her as Wednesday. I think she looks great. A lot of the creatures kind of look cool, but I do think it ends up feeling kind of generic and like a sort of forgettable teen mystery. I like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina more than I like this. It's not quite Riverdale level of ridiculous, you know, but it's. I wish that it was more ambitious than it is, and I wish that they were a bit more stylish and creative with the visuals than they were. That was what really turned me off about the show so far. So far the first season. I don't know if they're going to do a second season or not, but I kind of hope they do, and I hope the second season can kind of up the stuff that was missing here and kind of find the actual magic of this show, because there's potential here, but I don't think the first season reaches that potential.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. I feel like there's definitely some level of potential here, and I don't know what that is. I feel like going more in the dark and the mysterious, and almost I almost feel like if I could pluck anyone to do season two, to be in charge of season two, someone who already has a very strong relationship with Netflix, I'd be interested in, like, if they were to announce Mike Flanagan as the showrunner of season two and just go straight. I almost feel like that'd be the better direction to go, is go more into the straight horror type feel.
Yeah, I was honestly thinking Del Toro. He has that good Netflix relationship too. Yeah, I could see him doing a good second season. And I think that would be almost kind of fun. It's like you hand each season to a different kind of prolific director and give them their take on the Wednesday Addams. But I would love, if they do a season two, to have it be more hands-on. You know, if you're going to have Del Toro attached, doesn't have to direct every episode, but he can be like involved in the creative process. And I didn't feel like it had to, this didn't feel like any Tim Burton movie or Tim Burton show to me at all. His name was on there for a couple episodes, but it didn't feel like it had his style or his tone or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I don't know, because I mean, one thing I did like about this show is I felt like it almost bridged because there were multiple points that had flashbacks, and I felt like it bridged the gap between the 60s TV series and the 90s TV series, because like the main difference, or the 90s movies rather, in the 60s TV series, the main difference is the portrayal of Wednesday Addams, where Wednesday Addams in the TV series is just kind of this fun, lighthearted kid. She's not even that specifically dark. She just has like pet spiders and stuff like that. Where the Wednesday Addams in the 90s movies is very much like a dark character, like enjoys murder and stuff like that. And there was almost a moment in a flashback that explained what that difference was. I don't want to spoil it for anyone watching, wants to watch the show who hasn't yet, but I felt like they kind of explained why there was that change, and I thought that was interesting. The one thing I didn't understand about this show is they portray the Addams families as someone who almost, the Addams family as someone who almost enjoys murder. Like they, you know, they, the idea of filleting people interests them, and then kind of the big crux of the story, mild spoilers, it's not really, it probably is in a trailer somewhere, is Wednesday believes her, there's a chance that her dad killed someone when he went to Nevermore, and she's like upset by that. And to me, it that didn't really track of like, why are you mad and trying to prove that your dad didn't murder someone when he's, based on everything else that I've seen in this version of the Addams Family, he's probably murdered countless people.
Yeah, I don't necessarily understand what they're going for with that. I definitely think that like it's much darker of a take on the characters than we've seen before. Like the movie is a dark take on the Wednesday, but this is like a Wednesday who enjoys murder, who says she's shot arrows at living targets and things like that. So definitely a darker take than I was expecting. And I think sometimes the writing falls because of that. Like it seems like sometimes they're writing it because they want to give Wednesday like cool dark one-liners that they can post on Twitter type of thing. You know, it's like it feels like some of this was written because they want people to screenshot it and post it on Tumblr or something like that, and not necessarily in the way that a character would say it or in a way that helps the plot of the story, you know. So I think that was definitely a flaw here. Sometimes the writing felt like it was written more for memes than it was for the actual narrative.
All right. And so we move on to our next topic. I feel like people know kind of where we stand with Wednesday. You watched the docuseries Pepsi, Where's My Jet?
I did. This is a story of a man who, back in the 90s, Pepsi had a promo where they put out a catalog. It was My Pepsi Stuff, something like that, where you would buy Pepsi cans, Pepsi bottles, and you could redeem those product for points. And those points could add up and add up and add up, and you could eventually redeem them for jackets or for merch or for different things like that. And the problem was that Pepsi put out a TV ad, and in that TV ad, they made a joke where they said, hey, if you redeem 7 million points, you could get a fighter jet, you know, a military grade fighter jet. And there was no fine print, no disclosure at the end. They just said 7 million points, get a fighter jet. They assumed it would be a joke. No one's going to get 7 million points. But one guy saw that ad and he said, I'm taking this personally. I'm getting 7 million points and I'm getting my fighter jet. And he made it his life's mission to buy as much Pepsi as humanly possible. You know, he had carts and carts full of Pepsi. He was gathering up coupons, you know, to getting Pepsi from his friends, from the trash, and doing anything he could possibly get to get those 7 million points. And of course, once he gets those points, Pepsi starts to say, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. We're not actually going to give out a fighter jet. We don't actually have a fighter jet to give out. So that's a no. So it becomes this kind of battle of, hey, I got my points. You said we got a fighter jet. Where's my fighter jet, Pepsi? And you kind of get that man versus the machine kind of story where it's the big PepsiCo with all their lawyers and all of their kind of fine print and their contracts. And then there's the guy who said, look, I got my points. The ad said fighter jet. Where's my fighter jet? So I like this as a kind of takedown of the man type of story. And you get kind of a look at kind of the weird consumer culture of the 90s where everyone, especially in the US, it was like a really successful time economically. So people were very much into consuming, into buying and buying and buying. And this kind of leans into that a bit too. I think it runs into some problems that a lot of these Netflix documentary series run into where you get halfway through and you start to realize like this is not a series worth of, like, this should have been like an hour and a half, you know, and you probably could have gotten it all in there.
So I was almost going to watch it, and then I saw, because I saw someone on Reddit talk about it, and I was like, oh yeah, I was going to watch that. And then the immediate next comment was, yeah, this was like 3 hours long. It was like 3 1-hour episodes, and I felt like it would have been really great if it was 60 to 90 minutes. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to watch it because of that.
Yeah, Netflix has that problem a lot, and it usually turns me off from a lot of not just their documentary series, but some of their miniseries have that problem too, where I get halfway through and I think this is just dragging and this should not have been this long. And this has that problem. Like, the first episode gets on this whole tangent about, like, when he was an infant and he would, like, be so rebellious as an infant and he used to break out of his crib and run around the house. And it's like, okay, I mean, I understand you're building this, like, the profile of this character, but, like, that just feels like you were like, okay, we got to make 3 or 4 episodes out of this. Like, we got to add something to this. And that's the biggest flaw here.
Did they do the thing that Netflix is, I mean, maybe not because it wasn't so much a mystery, but in a lot of their mystery doc series, they spend like a whole episode being like, we thought it was this way and this way and this way and this way. And then at the end, they spend the final 2 minutes being like, but then we found out none of that was true and it wasn't like that at all. And I'm like, okay, but you knew that when you edited this, so why did you put any of this in here and waste an hour of my life?
Yeah, there, not necessarily that, but there's a lot of like really long takes of the guy explaining like every single thing he was doing to get as much Pepsi as he could get. And I'm like, they're really like dragging out this edit here, you know. I wonder how long they had this guy sitting here talking about this stuff, because he's saying a lot of the same thing over and over again here.
Yeah. All right, you ready to move on to Disney Plus? You got anything?
I'm ready. Is there a fan?
Yeah. If you like fighter jets and Pepsi.
Yeah, if you like fighter jets, if you like Pepsi, if you do like kind of the man versus the big machine type of story, you'll like this. It's a fun. You get a lot of odd characters too. Like, there's a guy that comes in, is kind of like an investor into this guy's journey. You know, who says, "I'm gonna help you along the path and buy you some Pepsi." And he's like this really odd radio host who's kind of super into working out, and he hates Pepsi and he hates Coke. He hates all of that soft drink stuff. But he was like, "Hey, I want to see Pepsi be held to their word, so I'm gonna help this guy out." So that's kind of an odd character. There's a couple of odd characters in here, so it's a fun watch. And only 4 episodes, but it's not quite maybe, but it's pretty short, so it's not that much of a drag. But yeah, definitely a worthwhile watch if you're into the kind of the taking down of the big corporation stories.
All right, well, we're gonna hop over to Disney Plus. I'm gonna go a little bit out of order. Let's start with the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. I'll give my kind of breakdown first. Kind of the basic plot is it opens with an animated segment of Yondu and Star-Lord when he was a young teenager, and Yondu not really caring about Christmas, and Star-Lord kind of wanting to show everyone on the ship what Christmas is about. And now Star-Lord's new friends want to give him the Christmas because he hasn't been able to have Christmas in a long time. And so they decide, it's mainly Mantis Mantis and Drax, talking a lot about Dave Bautista today. Mantis and Drax want to give Star-Lord the Christmas he hasn't had in a while, and they decide to give him his hero, Kevin Bacon, the star and focus of all these great heroic endeavors. And they decide they're going to find Kevin Bacon and bring him back to Star-Lord. And so it's a lot of them walking around Earth. And I'm going to be honest, I thought this was a whole lot of nothing. Like, I think the best thing for this that could have been interesting is if they somehow were able to make it like in Marvel canon, but have it be a variety show, whether some like villain puts them in some weird trance or something, just to do something interesting. In my opinion, there wasn't really much interesting here or worthwhile, to the point that if you're not like a hardcore Marvel or hardcore Guardians of the Galaxy fan, I really don't see a point in watching this at all. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I was kind of looking forward to this because we talked about it as like the finale of this phase, and the Guardians of the Galaxy are pretty entertaining characters, and I also really love Kevin Bacon. I think Kevin Bacon was honestly like the standout strong point of this special. I feel like he's having so much fun with his performance. He's playing himself, but obviously he's playing kind of like an exaggerated caricature of himself. And there's a point here where I'll spoil this because I feel like there's not much to spoil here, honestly, but there's a point where like he's put under Mantis' spell and he has to act like he's a real Hollywood action hero, like one of his characters would be. And he gives a really fun performance there. So I was surprised that, you know, all of the characters here and all of the odd Guardians of the Galaxy cast members, that Kevin Bacon was the one that ended up being the big standout for me. I thought he was really fun. That I'd honestly love to see like more of Kevin Bacon somewhere in the MCU again. But overall, definitely a bit of nothing. I liked it more than you did, I think, because I attached it to Kevin Bacon performance in the old 97s of the band that's featured here throughout the episode with Kevin Bacon. I'm a fan of that band, so it was kind of cool to see them like in the MCU as aliens. It was kind of odd, but it was an enjoyable kind of time. I didn't necessarily think it added a lot to either the Guardians characters or to the MCU as a whole. So I wish they would have, if you're not going to expand the MCU, you can at least do some stuff to work on the characterization of the people you're with. But they didn't do much with that either. I think one thing that was very unintentionally funny with this maybe was that Chris Pratt, I don't know where he was during this, because he seems like he was not on set or something. Because he has a couple of lines, he'll be like, "Oh man, guys, you really did this for me, guys," and then kind of like walk off, you know. Yeah. And I was like, I wonder if he just like couldn't be on set. He was busy with Jurassic Park. Maybe he, you know, didn't want to get his vaccine at the time, so he wasn't really able to be in some of the larger crowd scenes or what. But I started kind of laughing at the end because Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, was just such a non-presence in this special that it became unintentionally funny by the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that was part of it that I think was weird to me, is like it just felt very much like a soundstage or a set that I just didn't, I don't know. It just was boring and bland and nothing to me.
Yeah, with James Gunn at the helm, you want it to have some craziness. You know, you look at the Suicide Squad, and whether you love it or hate it, that was definitely like a James Gunn movie, you know, and this just feels like a Disney Plus kind of special that I guess James Gunn directed it, but it doesn't really feel like anything James Gunn.
Yeah. All right, so do you want to move to our movie of the week?
Let's go.
All right, so our movie of the week was the 1988 kids movie Willow. I'm going to be 100% honest, I forgot to watch it until this morning, so I only technically got an hour and 15 minutes into it. It's about an hour and 45. I know Tristan watched the whole thing, but of what I watched, I'm going to be honest, I was very much surprised by how much I've been enjoying it. It's essentially the premise is the character of Willow, who is, I guess his race is called Peck, but the actor, Warwick Davis, is a dwarf. And he finds this child, and he just wants to get the child to safety. He was floating across the river. It's a human child floating across the river, and he just wants to get the child to safety. And then it turns out, you know, before he finds the child, that this is a special child, and this is the child that's going to bring down the queen. And he meets some wild characters along the way, including Mad Mardigan, played by Val Kilmer. It was directed by Ron Howard, story by George Lucas, which is very obvious because it completely follows the Joseph Campbell Hero of a Thousand Faces story structure. And like I said, I'm very much surprised by how good it was. I honestly thought a lot of the people that liked it, that I've heard that like it, was purely nostalgia, mainly because I was like, oh, if it was that good, I feel like it would have been on like the rotation of on TV back in the day, like The Dark Crystal or Labyrinth or Neverending Story, because it very much is just in line with those movies. I just never really saw it on TV, so I just didn't think it'd be that good, because if it was, why isn't it on as much as those other movies? But Tristan, I believe you watched the full thing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I finished it today, and I was also really impressed by it. You know, I heard over the years, oh, it's basically like Star Wars, and not really. I mean, it follows the similar arc of the hero's journey, like you mentioned, but it honestly is more Lord of the Rings to me than Star Wars. But it has all of these like mythical races that are all kind of like these really defined appearances. And yeah, Warwick Davis, he's a dwarf, but he also lives like among an entire clan of all dwarfs and little people, which I thought was kind of a nice representation. And how often do you see like dwarfs and little people given all of these roles in a movie and actually like having a developed culture and developed characters, you know, not just being like a punchline of a joke? I thought that was a pretty cool thing to see right from the front. But yeah, this was a great fun adventure. I love the fantastical setting of it, but I also love that they kind of use the fantasy archetypes and also build their own kind of world with it. You know, it's not just your basic, you know, knights in shining armor type of world. It has its own flair to it too. I like this a lot. Yeah, I'm really, after watching this, I'm way more excited for the show than I was before, because it really compelled me with the world and the characters. And yeah, it's service the same kind of hero's journey you've seen a couple of times before, but who really cares? You know, we've seen every story told times before, and if it's going to be told really, really well, then it's a good movie to me, you know? And I think that this is a really, really good movie, one that I wish I had seen when I was a kid, because if I watched this when I was young, I probably would have, like, adored it, and it would have been, like, the greatest thing I'd ever seen. It would have had all the things that I was looking for in a movie, but I get to watch it as an adult, and I still had a great time with it, so yeah, highly recommend it if you were putting it off like we were, because it's a great watch, and it's going to get you more hype for the show than you probably were going into it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very much, the show was something I was going to watch because, hey, we're doing this show, but do I care about it? Not really, and now I actually genuinely am excited to watch the show that comes out, I believe, this week, so we'll be doing that episode one review when it comes out.
And it's also cool to see Val Kilmer, because you haven't really seen, he's obviously not acting now, and he was just had this, that appearance in Top Gun Maverick, so if you want to see him kind of at his prime, you can check him out here.
Yeah, definitely. And now, speaking of Star Wars, we had the finale to season one of Andor, and a lot of talk on Twitter, basically, of people ranking the Star Wars shows, and I have a controversial opinion. For me, I prefer The Mandalorian, mainly because it's what I came to Star Wars for, but I also recognize that Andor's far better made. It's just not exactly what I come to Star Wars for. But if you have Andor number one, I completely get it. I have no fault in your logic, but I thought this was a really great, well-done kind of political thriller, rebel story, immigrant story. It completely makes sense why the production title for this show was Pilgrim. And, you know, things like this is more what I want Star Wars to be. Not necessarily like the dark political thriller. Obviously, I'm perfectly fine with them doing it again, especially if it's done as well as Tony Gilroy has done season one. But I just want them to do, oh, let's take this story that's been done, but just put the Star Wars skin on it. And that's what I hope they continue to do moving forward. But Tristan, what are your thoughts on the season one of Andor?
I thought this was great. And for me, it's easily my favorite of Disney's Star Wars shows. It's not what I go to Star Wars for either, but it was done so well that it won me over. You know, for the first couple episodes, I did feel like I was kind of on the defense almost, because I was watching it and I was enjoying it, but I was having that same feeling of like, this is not exactly my Star Wars, you know? And that's a personal bias, so I really had to try to get over that. But yeah, once I got into this series, I loved it. And I think, yeah, I love that Star Wars now can hopefully get to this point where it doesn't all have to be the same tone or the same style. We can give Tony Gilroy his hard drama. You know, we can give him his spy thriller. Then maybe we can give somebody else their wacky comedy one time, or we can give somebody else their kind of big, fantastical, Jedi-led adventure type of thing, too. And I think that Star Wars was getting too close to feeling samey. And I hope that this can be a sign that things can feel different and still be successful, you know? And they don't all have to feel the same. I like that about the show a lot. And I also like that it takes itself very seriously, not just like in the production, but in the themes. It actually engages with complex themes about like radicalization and oppression. And Star Wars has that, but it hasn't really dived into it deeply, you know? And this kind of looks at what it is really like to live under an oppressive government, to live under, you know, the Empire, to have all of your options being taken away to the point where you have no other choice but violent rebellion. You know, what does that look like for a person? What does it look like to lose hope in your system? What does it look like to have every other path taken from you? And I really like that about this show. I like that it has teeth. I like that it wasn't so happy and high-fiving and saying quips and giving you the Star Wars lines and that kind of a thing. It actually felt like a genuine TV show that was just happened to be set within Star Wars. And I think it's great. I understand the criticism if you're like, oh, this is not really what I want from Star Wars. I want lightsabers. I want the Force. I want Jedi. And this doesn't have any of that stuff. So maybe it's not going to be for you. But if Star Wars is dead to you, or if Star Wars is something that kind of doesn't really work for you now, especially under Disney, this could be the thing that works for you. I'm not going to say it's going to pull you back in and make you a Star Wars fan again, but this could be the one thing they've done that you'll actually get something out of. So I highly recommend it. Even if you're not a Star Wars fan, I don't think you have to know Star Wars necessarily to even watch this. You know, it doesn't require you to know the characters or know deep lore or anything like that. You just You just have to know the basics. Oppressive empire.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's an empire and it's oppressive, and that's really all you need to know.
Yep.
All right, and now I believe we are finished with Disney Plus. Let me double check my notes here. I don't really think there's anything else I have for Disney Plus. Oh yeah, we had some news. What is it? The CCXP?
Yeah, they have a big convention coming up, a Comic-Con coming up this week on Thursday, and I didn't think it was anything special, but Marvel announced they have a 3-hour panel for themselves, and they have some big names attached to it. Marvel, Star Wars, Indiana Jones have all been mentioned as being part of this 3-hour panel, and now that we've had this CEO change, it might be an opportunity for them to kind of present what the future is going to be, not just for Disney as a whole, but like Disney Plus specifically. So I'd be curious to see if we get some schedule changes, some new movies or shows announced here, and just kind of a better picture of what to expect from Disney and Disney Plus going forward. And also not necessarily Disney Plus related, but you might want to keep your eyes up. Maybe the Indiana Jones trailer could drop this week. I could see that happening on Thursday. I could see, you know, maybe another Ant-Man trailer dropping, something like that, to get the Marvel Disney train hype rolling again for 2023. Believe it or not, we are heading into the next year already, so it could be a fun one to watch. You know, 3 hours, I'm sure they're bound to drop a couple of good things in there.
All right, and yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Anytime a new trailer drops, I'm excited about it. I have reasons to believe that the Indiana Jones movie will be incredible, and I don't want to get into it, but I have faith that it will be incredible. And so that brings us to Hulu. New show dropped, a show when I found out about it I was very interested in, just because I'm like, oh, that's a subject matter I didn't know anything about. I don't know, Tristan, did you watch it or no?
I didn't check it out. No, it's only a couple episodes in, right? So I'm hoping I can catch up by the time it ends.
Only the first two episodes, I believe, dropped, maybe first three, but it's called Welcome to Chippendales, and it stars Kumail Nanjiani, and it's basically about the creation and formation of the Chippendales club, I guess is what it's called, and kind of the very dark origin and the dark story around it. Something, I'll be honest, I don't know much. Before starting the show, I didn't know anything about Chippendales outside of the Patrick Swayze, Chris Farley SNL sketch. I knew it was like a male dance club, something about that. But then I found out there were some murders and some other dark things involved with the creation of the Chippendales dance, the Chippendales club. So I was interested in checking out. And the first two episodes, you know, they got me hooked. I'm going to be watching the rest of the season, and I'll be doing a season wrap up when the season's over. But it's been really good so far. If you kind of just like your dark true crime kind of story, definitely check it out. Especially if you're a Kumail fan, because as someone who's really only seen him in comedies, I think he's given a really good performance here.
Yeah, I'll definitely be checking it out. I know very little about the Chippendales at all. Like you said, I'm probably in the same boat you were before you started this. So yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it. And I like Kumail Nanjiani a lot, so it'll be cool to see how he does in this role.
All right. And I believe there was a movie you watched on Hulu as well, Crimes of the Future. How do you like that?
Yeah, I finally checked off the 2022 David Cronenberg entry, Crimes of the Future. I really enjoyed this. I'm kind of a David Cronenberg fan. I would say I'm not that experienced with him, but what I've seen from him I really, really like. So I would call myself a fan. And this one says Viggo Mortensen, Leah Sado, Kristen Stewart. So some pretty nice additions to the cast here. And it follows kind of this new era where, you know, it's all about kind of metamorphosis of your body, and kind of surgery is kind of the new sex. It's all about transforming yourself, and it leans into that body horror for sure. There's some pretty shocking imagery. If you know David Cronenberg, you know he can do some pretty shocking body horror imagery, and that's there for sure. I think Kristen Stewart is a standout of this cast. She's giving a really odd, kind of twitchy, weird performance here that I had a lot of fun with, and I wanted more of her in this. If you're a Cronenberg fan, you get a lot out of this. It's not my favorite from Cronenberg, but for his comeback movie after a long time of kind of being in irrelevance, I think this is a great return to form. If it's your first time watching Cronenberg, this is probably a solid start, because it'll bring you into all of his themes of body horror and the kind of merging of technology with your physical being. Those are all things that he focuses on a lot in his primary movies from what I've seen. So I definitely recommend it if you haven't seen anything from Cronenberg. It's one of the few that's streaming from him. There's some of his older stuff is streaming, but a lot of his more prolific stuff is not streaming. So this could be your shot to check out some Cronenberg and give an opinion on a really divisive movie. Some people hated this, some people love this, and I'm on the positive side for sure, but definitely one of the better movies of this year and one of Cronenberg's better movies, I would say too. So I highly recommend it.
All right, yeah, something I'll check out if I got time. It felt like something that I wish would have came out on Halloween. Speaking of Halloween, I want to go back and make a point on something before. Why the hell did they not release Wednesday in October? That's one thing I didn't understand as I was watching it. I'm like, if they had released this, they would have been free marketing, because I think every girl between the age of like 15 and 25 would have been Wednesday for Halloween. I think it could have been like the new Harley Quinn. I feel like there would have been audio clips all over TikTok. I think it just would have been pure free advertising, and they released it in November, and now they get none of that. I don't know. It's just
a very, very strange choice. I feel like Halloween would be the perfect time for a Wednesday Addams show. And I believe this got added to Hulu like on Halloween night. So you could have watched it on Halloween, but yeah, I would have probably put a couple weeks earlier in October maybe, because this would be a nice creepy Halloween watch, but it didn't make it in time.
Yeah. All right, and so that kind of wraps up our discussion show. And one thing I wanted to bring up with Tristan is originally we were going to have Planes, Trains, and Automobiles be our movie of the week next week, just because it's kind of a Thanksgiving movie, but it looks like I can't find it streaming anywhere, so it could be a problem with this being our Christmas movie. So I didn't know if you wanted to wait or have me throw out an option, something I watch every Christmas, and so I kind of don't need to watch it to review it, but may still make it a recommendation, or if we wanted to wait and we can just tweet it out later.
No, throw me out something. Throw me out a good suggestion, Joe.
Bill Murray Scrooged, a movie that's kind of around, but I don't know if it's really in anybody's like kind of Christmas movie cycle like it is in mine. I have two movies I watch every Christmas, and that's Scrooged and Die Hard. But
I definitely would watch Scrooged. I haven't seen it. We did a pitch for it on Movie Changeup once.
You've never watched Scrooged?
I have not.
It's free on Amazon Prime. So our movie of the week next week, we'll be doing Christmas movies, or at least holiday movies, up until Christmas. And so with that, our first December movie of the week will be Scrooged, which is streaming free on Amazon Prime, which is perfect because Prime is usually the movies we are the topic we are lacking the most in. So that lines up perfectly.
Works for me. Can't wait to see it. Kick off the Christmas season, Joe. Yep. It'll be December. Can you believe it?
And now, what do you want to do first? Our winner of the month of what streaming services, our winner of the month, or do you want to do our MVP of the week?
Let's go with the MVP first.
All right, so I have my MVP nomination locked in, and I was higher on this than you are, and I think I know where you may be going. But my vote for MVP of the week is Jenna Ortega as Wednesday Addams. I think I thoroughly enjoyed that show, and it was mostly because of her and her performance as Wednesday Addams.
I really like that nomination. I definitely think she carries that show, and any joy that I got from the show pretty much came from her performance, so I definitely liked that nomination. I'm going to go for the man who carried Andor from start to finish, you know, the man who took Andor from a supporting character in a movie how many years ago to one that we wanted to see more of, and that's Diego Luna. So I'm nominating Diego Luna, the leading man of Andor, the Andor himself. So that's my pick for MVP. Joe, how are you feeling about that one?
All right. So here's kind of where I'm at as far as who I'm leaning towards. I feel like Andor succeeded because of Tony Gilroy and the writing and direction and everything. Not to take away anything that Diego Luna did. I thought Diego Luna was great in the show, but I feel like the reason people love that show isn't necessarily because of him. He didn't take anything away. I'm sure he added to it. But the main positives of that show come from Tony Gilroy, a previous winner of the week because of his work on Andor. I feel like all of the positives for me, no, I wouldn't say all of the positives, but a lot of the positives and the greatness from Wednesday come from Jenna Ortega. And I feel like if we're saying MVP, most valuable player, I don't even know if Diego Luna is the MVP of his own show, let alone the MVP, overall MVP of the league. But for me, and also if we're saying MVP of the week, we're only saying that Diego Luna won MVP off the back of that last episode, where Jenna Ortega had the luxury of having her entire season drop in 1 week.
That's a good argument. I like the argument of when you look at it from just the week, it's Jenna Ortega's week. You know, people have been posting her quotes online, her, you know, the screenshots of everything she's saying. And yeah, she's the energy of that show. She's the reason I would say to watch it. So you won me over, Joe. I'm going to go. I'm on your side. Give me Jenna Ortega, the MVP of the week.
All right. And with that, Jenna Ortega, as Wednesday Addams on Netflix, is our MVP of the week. And now we move on to a more contentious topic, I believe, unless Tristan and I agree, but I don't even know where I'm leaning myself, and that is the winner of the month. What streaming service should you have had this month? The one that I don't know what the hell you were watching if you didn't have this streaming service. And Tristan, do you have any thoughts, any direction you'd lean?
For me, I know there's an argument to be made for Disney Plus, but I think their one hit of Andor was not enough to stand up against Netflix this month. Netflix had so much on their lineup. You know, I guess I can't count Knives Out too, but I'll count stuff like Wednesday, stuff like 1899, which was one of the best things that I've watched for this show. And All Quiet on the Western Front, a really, really well-produced war movie. I think Netflix is showing their variety, showing their strength, and especially coming out of a time where I started to feel like Netflix was giving us garbage over and over again all the time. And it now feels like they're stepping it up a bit. They're trying to compete and they're giving us some great stuff. I definitely am voting for Netflix this week. I know Disney Plus has Andor, but I think all of their other opportunities to make headlines failed for them. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy special was pretty much nothing. The I Am Groot short was absolutely, I mean, not the I Am Groot, Baby Yoda little animated short for Grogu was pretty much absolutely nothing at all. And I feel like Disney has had a hard time outside of their main flagship shows having anything at all interesting. Whereas Netflix, I think every other week, if not every week, has something that's at least worth watching and worth talking about. Whereas Disney, it's their one show and that's basically it.
All right. So are we discounting the Elton John live Farewell from Dodger Stadium, a live worldwide broadcast?
That's true. I did overlook the live worldwide broadcast.
Are we discrediting, you know, Disenchanted?
Yeah, I will.
I didn't watch it. I'm just saying, you know, what are we trying to talk about here? I'm just trying to throw things out, make sure this is a fair fight, make sure we're talking about everything. I did think it was probably between Disney Plus and HBO Max, or not HBO Max, Netflix rather. And I agree, Andor is the big flagship show. And while a lot of the stuff that you're recommending and saying were positive about Netflix, I didn't watch. I have seen kind of over the internet and over Twitter and all that stuff as like things people were watching, and I do think Netflix is probably the correct choice. So with that, I will say, yeah, the winner of the month, the streaming service that you shouldn't have got through November without, is the Mac Daddy of them all, the one that originated it, everything, and that is Netflix.
I like it, Joe. It was Disney Plus for a little while, and I feel like Netflix, you know, they put the effort in this month, so yeah. I had to give it to them.
All right, so our winner of the month. And so, one thing I wanted to talk about, I was going to talk about it when we did MVP of the week, and maybe it would have gave Disney Plus some bumps here, is who all of our winner of the week. So one thing I'm going to do every, kind of at the end of every month, is do a recap of our winner of the week. And so the first week in November, we chose Count Dooku from Disney Plus's Tales of the Jedi. The second week, we chose Weird Al from the Weird, the Al Yankovic story on Roku. The third week, we chose Andy Serkis from Disney Plus's Andor. And last week, we chose Elton John from Disney Plus's Elton John Live. So a lot of Disney Plus love. They had a lot of MVPs. But when it came to the overall, they won in the aggregate, and that's Netflix.
I'm excited for next month. I know we're going to talk about next episode, our most anticipated drops of December. So it'll be interesting to see who ends up winning for December. Because I have to imagine the end of the year, a lot of these platforms are going to start dropping like their Oscar contenders, essentially. You know, they're big hitters. So I'm curious to see who has the big hitters of the year here.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I think we're going to see a lot of Christmas type stuff on our top 10 list next week.
Can't wait.
All right. Anything else you got to say before we end the show here?
Can't believe we're going into the last month, Joe, of the year. But it's been a fun year so far, so I'm looking forward to the last, kicking it out with the last month here.
Yeah, same. And that's all I have. So without further ado, goodbye. Hey, thank you for watching the Movie Change Up podcast. We'd really appreciate if you liked, commented, subscribed, and shared us with anyone you think might be into what we're doing over here. Thank you. Have a nice day.